This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind the decisions we make every day and how to make better ones. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman. Join me as I share true stories from Nobel laureates, athletes, authors, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better decisions in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
People spend a third of their life, you know, in workplaces. They can't just get up and walk away. If I have a dispute with somebody in the street, I can say, I'm not talking to that person ever again. But when it's in the workplace, we have to go back to that.
Welcome to How To. I'm Amanda Ripley. 85% of people say they encounter conflict at work. Some of that conflict is good, right? Healthy debate where we challenge each other's ideas can absolutely make us stronger as people and as organizations. But sometimes conflict can do real damage. 1 in 4 people have seen conflict lead to sickness or absences at work. Close to a third experience conflict always or frequently. That can make work, and actually your whole life, kind of miserable. Our listener this week, who we're calling Christy, came to us to share her experience working in a toxic environment.
I had somebody who was continually yelling in my face. I would speak up. I would tell the person to stop yelling, to stop screaming in my face, that it was abusive, that it needed to stop, and that we needed to work together. I was yelled at one day, weeks before I left, why are you even talking?
That sounds awful. And how long were you at this job, Christy?
Over 30 years.
Oh, wow. We're going to keep the specifics of Christy's previous job intentionally vague here at her request, but it was a factory with hundreds of employees, and Christy was part of a team that maintained heavy machinery. And one guy in particular kept giving her a hard time, and then others would join in too.
I felt like I was being attacked. I felt like they were trying to isolate me. There was rumors spread about me. It just became so toxic, I couldn't do it anymore. I just didn't feel safe.
Christy tried talking to her bosses and to human resources. She even filed grievances with her union. But she says the situation never got better.
I have a whole file called my emotional file, where I was trying to process the things that were happening to me and just trying to write them down and piece them together. I had papers all over the floor. My poor partner didn't know what to do with me at that point in time. But that was my way of getting it out of my body, because it was sitting in my body like a big ball of yarn. And I couldn't separate it all at that point. There was so much trauma.
Eventually, Christy felt she had no choice but to walk away, leaving behind a good salary and benefits. But she knows people at her old workplace who are still enduring this abuse. And she doesn't want anyone else to have to go through what she went through. And I'm assuming you sound like a strong woman who speaks up for herself, not the type to be pushed around. So it sounds like it was extra infuriating that you felt like no one was listening. Is that right?
It certainly was. I am the kind of person who speaks up for myself. But I couldn't do anything, and it was just horrifying that I couldn't do anything and that I had to watch other women being put in this position, and I couldn't do anything about it.
This is a very complex problem with no one-size-fits-all solution. Power dynamics matter. We can't say for sure how much of a role gender played in this particular situation, but we're interested today in what we can do despite all of these other factors we can't control, which is why we turn to Megan Hunter. She is the co-founder and CEO of the High Conflict Institute in California. She helps folks like Christy deal with high conflict personalities, especially at work, something she knows about firsthand.
I remember the dread of waking up in the morning and driving to work and that long commute, thinking, just feeling that knot in my stomach. And I would assume that you've felt that knot in your stomach as well.
You nailed it.
Yep. It's just a sense of dread. And, you know, in our work, we hear three words repeatedly. I'm exhausted from the chaos, and I dread going there again.
On today's show, Megan will share some ideas for untangling the knot in your stomach. Don't go anywhere.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman, a behavioral scientist and professor at the Wharton School and the author of the best-selling book, How to Change. You may have heard expressions like, time to get up and going, today's bad decisions aren't going to make themselves, or bad decisions make good stories. But really, no one wants to suffer the consequences of making a bad choice. Join me as I share true stories from sports heroes, Nobel laureates, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll discuss the latest research in behavioral science and dive into themes like whether we can learn to make smarter decisions and how powerful it can be to get a do-over. And we'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better choices in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
If you're dealing with a bully at work, one of the things that can be most helpful, but feels like the last thing you want to do, is to try to understand them.
This high conflict personality is a person who repeats the same behavior over and over again everywhere they go. And it comes down to four basic things, and all of their behaviors will come under these four. One is unmanaged emotions, extreme behaviors, all or nothing thinking, and blame. I call them instant blamers. We also call them people who focus on a target of blame. So it's always someone else's fault and they're always the victim. And this person or persons who were causing you a lot of problems, Christy, I think you'd probably agree, instead of being a powerful person, they're probably a very insecure person. Would you agree with that?
I don't know that, but I don't understand why you would have a problem working with somebody else who's trying to work with you and why you would feel you need to degrade them.
Bingo.
A strong person with leadership doesn't need to bully.
Correct. So here's the thing. These folks with this different operating system, this high conflict personality, they're driven by a sense of, they have like a fear-based personality instead of a personality that's just kind of getting through life and can have reasonable interactions with others. And I think that's what you expected at your workplace. It sounds like you had many years of reasonable interactions with people, and then suddenly one or more persons come along and, you know, things are no longer reasonable. So someone like this may come across seeming very secure and very powerful, but what's underneath it, I would argue, is a fear of feeling inferior. So the person who fears feeling inferior, their default operating system is to feel superior. Okay, it's an opposites world. So to feel powerful again, I've got to put someone else down.
I'm struck by, Megan, how you keep talking about how it's a different operating system. I feel like you're trying to tell us something, which is that, like, don't think you can apply your normal rules of engagement.
Yes.
Here. Like, those will not work here. You have entered a different planet.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, you're right, Amanda. It's the way I put it is, because they do have this different system, then, and we don't know the rules, we just have to know the rules. And then we can manage that relationship instead of having that person and their, you know, fear-driven operating system manage us.
So when you go to planet high conflict, you need to have a manual, you're
right.
Saying, so that you can't use your normal Earth behavior.
Exactly.
Is that what you mean?
It could be Mars. I don't know.
A workplace bully acts like someone from another planet. It's true. But the phrase itself, high conflict,
originates from a very human conflict zone right here on Earth, divorce court.
The courts were seeing so many parents coming through, the courts that just blamed each other and fought and screamed and yelled and sabotaged. And they'd come back to court over and over again, and to the point where we started calling them frequent filers. Instead of frequent flyers, they were frequent filers. And, most people, the 80 to 90%, were mediating their cases out of court or coming to out-of-court settlements or just agreements between themselves. But the 10 to 20% couldn't seem to make those agreements on their own, and they were blaming, and it was all or nothing. And it was the screaming and yelling, and they were seeking the court to agree with them and take their side. Surprise, surprise, those same people have jobs.
And so you can see how that might translate, right, to the workplace or to other places. I wonder, most people run, don't walk from this kind of behavior, but you, Megan, have gone towards it.
Because I'm crazy,
like,
I guess.
how did that happen? And why doesn't it scare the crap out of you?
I don't know. It started when I was a child support caseworker in a county attorney's office in Nebraska. Small town, small county. And I fell in love with doing child support, mostly because I enjoyed getting people to agreement.
And you have specialized, right, in workplace high conflict and written a bunch of books on the subject. And I'm struck by, I think your use of words is really helpful. Like you said earlier that you hear three words when people come to you for help. And I think the words were exhaustion, chaos, and dread.
That's it.
Christy, do those words resonate with you?
Oh, man, she's nailing so much over here.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding. I could throw in about 10 more words, but you understand what I'm talking about. You understand how humiliating, how demeaning, how betrayed somebody is when they go through all of this.
Yeah, and it's demoralizing, and you try and try everything you know to do. And ultimately, some people just give up and have to accept it because there's no recourse. If their organization, can't help, won't help.
I could not just not do anything. I could not watch the next group of human beings having to go through what I went through. I did so much to try to stop this. I tried going to so many different people. I couldn't fix it.
Mm-hmm. You're a problem solver. Unfortunately, despite our best skills and our best tools and our best efforts and our best smiles, sometimes it still doesn't work. And sometimes we do still have to leave. And I know that's frustrating, Christy, because it feels to me that you do like to solve a problem and you don't sweep things under the rug.
So here's our first insight. Leadership matters. Leaders have to put standards and norms in place to prevent this kind of mistreatment. And then managers all the way down the line have to enforce those standards. You would think in 2022 that most companies would have these policies in place, and most of them do, but you have to enforce them. So if bullying or harassment of any kind occurs, then leadership responds to it quickly. Megan, can you describe that to us? Like you said, you've seen places where they've figured this out, like they have policies in place. What does that look like?
Yeah, so it mostly is large organizations who have taken a real interest in having a strong people culture, right? A people first culture. And taking the time to develop policies that protect everyone and provide boundaries and set limits and very, very clear consequences if you cross the boundaries.
Sometimes leaders will fail and you may have to leave, like Christy did. But what if you can't? After the break, we'll uncover some surprising ways to respond to a bully in real time when you have no other good choices. Stay with us.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're back with our listener, Christy, and our expert, Megan Hunter, co-founder and CEO of the High Conflict Institute. So we've learned that someone with a high conflict personality doesn't play by normal rules. They often have a deep fear of being inferior. So their default operating system is to act aggressively superior in ways that can do a lot of damage to a company and to the people who work there.
I was quite lucky to have a decent support system around me, and it still took me a long time. So in my mind, I'm thinking, what's happening to these other girls who don't have that?
Yep.
What's happening to these girls who are trying to raise their kids and don't have the ability to walk away from this type of abuse because they can't afford to lose a week's pay and keep up? What's happening to people who are in a worse position than me?
And I've been there, I have to tell you. You just described my life for a while when I was divorced and a single parent with young children. And I had, I'd moved from a very rural area to a big city. And it wasn't the type of job that you could just go somewhere else and get. And so I felt trapped. And I'm sure the women you're talking about feel trapped. And it's hard because high conflict people don't stop themselves, right? They're basically in a kind of in a fight or flight mode where this fear is triggered, and they're just driven by this entirely different operating system, and it just repeats itself over and over again like Groundhog Day. They're blaming, they're being defensive, they can't handle the criticism, they're bullying, all of it. So
I'm curious, Megan, do high conflict people that you're describing, do they tend to have suffered in their own?
Yes. High conflict people in general probably have experienced past trauma. Now, you know, some of it could be temperament that they're born with, attachment disruptions in that early childhood environment. In those, you know, really delicate years where you're learning everything and the mirror neurons are picking up everything and causing you to do exactly what you've seen, or trauma is just teaching them a different way. And the way I look at it is that's what's creating this operating system. Okay. So not everyone that experiences trauma is going to end up high conflict. I don't want anyone to think that, but some will.
And they cause more trauma in the world.
Yeah.
And the cycle just continues.
Perpetuates, right?
Sometimes a high conflict person or situation like what Christy faced is just too overwhelming to handle on your own. So it's critical to find support wherever you can. Christy, I wonder, you said earlier that you've sort of come to realize that this has been a kind of trauma for you. And I'm wondering, how could you tell that it had this effect on you?
Counseling, and honestly, I've listened to an awful lot of podcasts. It's the reason I wanted to do this, to potentially help somebody else. Because unfortunately what happens is when you get put in this position, there's also these other myths that people think is why can't victims deal with the bullying? They're grownups, right?
Did you feel that in yourself?
I did. I felt like there was something wrong that I couldn't fix this. How could I not get this fixed?
So what can you do in the moment to handle a workplace bully?
One technique you might try, if you feel confident enough to do it and you feel that you're in a safe enough place to do it, that you're not going to be in, you know, in harm's way, a physical danger, is to use what we call an EAR statement. And EAR stands for empathy, attention, or respect, okay? So the high conflict operating system is craving these three things. When you use any of those three, or to use them all together, that's what their brain is craving, and it will calm them typically. And then there's kind of a second part to it, and that is shifting them into thinking. I like to call it calm before think. What I need to do is give them a little ear to get them calm before I get them thinking. Because what's happening in their brain is that they're just, you know, kind of on fire, and they're going to blame and yell. So you're going to give them something calm, give them an EAR statement, and then shift it into questions. Questions make people think. When people are thinking, they become calmer. When you ask them a question that causes them to have to focus on a choice, it makes them calmer, and it keeps them away from the brain on fire yelling.
It's funny because so many things in high conflict are the opposite of what every fiber in my body wants to do. It's like it just takes a lot of training and practice. It feels like we shouldn't, if someone's treating us this way, we shouldn't give them what they want. Like, we shouldn't have to give them empathy, attention, and respect, right? Like, it's not right. It's not fair. And I just want to just voice that. And I know that you know that.
Yeah.
But I just want to say that.
I mean, it's exactly right. It doesn't feel fair. However, the first step in all of this is to accept that there is this 10 to 15% of the population who are high conflict. And if you can accept that, then you can get one step closer to stopping yourself before you go into your regular mode.
So another insight here, which is going to sound impossible at first, try to give the bully what he wants in a small way with a brief statement of respect or attention. Something like, man, I can see how frustrated you are by this situation, and I really want to help. I know. This sounds totally unfair, and it is. You shouldn't have to say this, and yet it works a surprising amount of the time. But what if, in the moment, you're just too upset to suddenly use this kind of Jedi mind trick? What then?
When I feel a certain way, when I have a strong feeling, that means dread, upset, anger, when I'm around this person, right? That bully at work. When I get a feeling, that means I have a dilemma. That means I better stop and figure out what I'm going to do. And so I just call it dilemmas and decisions, and you just sit down and write out a list of the options you can think of how to handle this situation. Okay, so Christy, you're really frustrated. You feel pissed off. Okay, I need to sit down, write out a list. What are my options? I could tell the guy off, you know, I could go to HR, I could quit my job. You can write down everything from the most ridiculous and what you feel like doing to the most logical and what you probably should do. And then you analyze the list by asking yourself a few little questions like, am I being defensive in this one? Am I all or nothing? You know, like firebombing his car is probably an extreme behavior.
Well, that was what was on my list. You read my
right.
mind.
And after you cross it off.
It sounds like you're trying to slow down your brain, right?
Right.
To interrupt the, which we wish that other person would do. But since they're not going to do it.
I had to do that many times, let me tell you.
Yeah. How did you do it? Did you find any tricks that worked for you?
A lot of times I would just have to walk away, count to 10.
Uh-huh.
It just wasn't easy to do. But the other thing what I found was happening is that the other people around also, people were getting more vicious when they saw nothing was being done about the harassment and bullying. It was like they were getting
permission.
You know, it becomes a tone of the environment. They can now act on something vicious that they may not have before. So trying to calm things down was sometimes even harder because there were simply no consequences in place, or at least none being enforced. So those people would either make it worse, or the bystanders would make it worse.
Right, because these emotions are contagious. And it also reminds me that the advice you were giving, Megan, about taking a break. And there's a guy named Bill Ury who is a negotiator, and he's worked on conflicts all around the world. And he tells this story about being in Venezuela, and he was working for months trying to help negotiate some kind of peace treaty. And he was supposed to have a meeting with Hugo Chavez, and he was waiting and waiting for him. And finally, around midnight, Chavez shows up and immediately starts berating Bill Ury, just screaming in his face for like a long time. And of course, Ury's reaction to this internally is to be indignant, outraged, and actually frightened, because it feels like he's now wasted all of this time and everything's falling apart.
I felt that before.
Yeah, you can relate, right? And it's, of course, in front of an audience. It's all of Chavez's, you know, entourage. And so it's now humiliating, which makes everything worse in conflict.
Yeah.
But because he had done this so many times and practiced it so many times in low stakes settings, he does this thing he calls going to the balcony in his own mind, where he imagines himself watching this from a balcony up above and just watching what's happening. So he's literally trying to get distance from it. Mm-hmm. And he kind of calms himself down. And then he literally did, Megan, the ear thing without calling it that. Mm. Like he tried to get super curious about what Chavez was actually upset about. Like what was really underneath this? He tried to really listen, which is so hard to do. But he tried to show him attention, show him empathy, show him respect. And then finally, Chavez stopped talking and said, well, what do you think we should do? And Bill Ury suggested that they do a temporary ceasefire because Christmas was coming and everybody was exhausted by the conflict. And Chavez said yes.
Hmm.
So on the one hand, this is bullshit. Like nobody should be allowed to scream in your face, not even Hugo Chavez, right?
Yeah.
And on the other hand, a bunch of people didn't get hurt because of this. So another suggestion here, if you're really triggered, you got to get some distance. If you can't go to the balcony in your own mind, and let's face it, most people can't without a lot of practice, then really try to take a break. And on that break, maybe make a list of all your options and put everything on it, even things you know you won't do. Christy, do you have advice if there's somebody listening, a woman who's dealing with this kind of abusive behavior at work every day? What would you tell her?
What I would say is that we need to speak up. We can't let it continue on. You have a right to be treated with dignity. You deserve to have psychological safety at work. You should know that what you do matters, and nobody should have a right to speak to you that way.
So it sounds like you would try to tell her from the bottom of your heart that this is not okay.
It's totally not okay. I recently talked to a person in the education system who told me that there was a teacher who took their life. This teacher was being harassed and bullied, and everybody around knew it was happening. So we are telling children to go to the adults and try to get something done about this. And we have a system here where a teacher took their own life because they couldn't get anything done about it. This is wrong.
So, I mean, there are situations that, you know, are impossible. And I don't want to say that this works, 100% of the time. There are some extraordinarily high conflict people out there, extreme bullies. And, you know, nothing will work with them short of them leaving the organization. And I hate to say that, but that is the reality. As much as we'd like to make it a perfect world and every organization, you know, run really smoothly, you've still got someone at the helm of that organization that may be overwhelmed, they may be confused, they may be high conflict themselves. But a really strong leader will have an understanding of these things and be prepared for it. Otherwise, it's going to be in disarray, it's going to be toxic, and you're going to lose really fantastic employees like Christy.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you giving me a voice. I really needed to feel heard, and I think it's really going to help me more in my healing.
Thank you to Megan Hunter for all of her great advice. If you're dealing with a high conflict person at work, definitely check out the book she co-authored with Bill Eddy called Biff at Work, Your Guide to Difficult Workplace Communication. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And thank you to Christy for her courage in reaching out to us and sharing her experience. She wanted us to ask if others have gone through something similar at work. How did you handle it? Let us know by emailing us at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001. And that's where you can always reach us with any other problems you're dealing with at work or in any other part of your life. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rosemary Belson and Katie Shepard produced the show. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown, remixed by Merritt Jacob, our technical director. Special thanks to Amber Smith. Charles Duhigg created this show. I'm Amanda Ripley. Thanks for listening.